The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, that is the future. That is the future, according to Dermot Desmond, the businessman, the Jetsons, of course, which was set in the 2060s, I think, 100 years after it was released into the world in the 1960s. But anyway, Dermot Desmond has suggested we shouldn't waste any money on the metro because it's going to be defunct within 15 to 20 years. AI is going to utterly revolutionise transport, both public and private. Is he right? Emmett Ryan is with me, the technology journalist, and Alan Smeaton, the Emeritus Professor of Computing at Dublin City University. Alan, I'll start with you. Easy question. Is he right? Well, we'll park the metro discussion for a moment. I'm sick of talking about the metro. Yeah. But in terms of how AI might revolutionise transport within 15 to 20 years.
Not within 10, 15, 20 years. Maybe
Maybe
by 2060, when the Jetsons projections would kick in, we will look at something that is a little closer to that. But no, that's not going to happen anytime soon. Beyond our lifetimes, perhaps.
Give us a sense of the ways in which it might. He gave a couple of examples in this interview or wherever he was speaking. He talked about kind of the bus system running itself, kind of responding to demand, that there'd be no human input and that it could kind of respond. But beyond that, I don't really know. That's why I was kind of reaching for the Jetsons example.
Yeah, I think he was probably building upon the way that Uber, the ride sharing, was designed. Most of us would use an Uber to be solo travellers from a place to a place. But in a lot of jurisdictions in the States, for example, you use an Uber in ride sharing. So you could be halfway through your journey and the car stops and picks up a total stranger who gets in, and then somebody else gets in, and then somebody gets off. So Ubers become like little mini buses travelling their own route depending upon the demand.
I scared about Jay's out of somebody in Melbourne getting into a ride share actually at my hotel. So I know exactly what you mean. It's very odd.
It is really strange because you don't feel like there's no privacy because you're not the sole transportee in the vehicle. So if you combine that with autonomous vehicles, which are driverless, which drive around, and you have some big magic AI, which is overseeing where people are and where they want to go, then that is the vision. But we're not going to get there.
But all that exists to a degree. Like the ride sharing is happening. Yeah. There are autonomous vehicles. Again, not in Ireland, but in other jurisdictions and parts of the States, you can get into autonomous taxis and what have you. The overseeing AI, that's probably low-level AI technology at this stage, just kind of managing transport.
Route planning,
And route planning. So why not?
It exists piecemeal.
Okay.
But one of the things that stops a new technology from taking off like this is what we call technological lock-in. If you're building a city from scratch, a blank sheet of paper, you might design it this way. But you're not. You're starting from an existing city with an existing infrastructure, an existing transport. You can't wipe it all away and start again from scratch.
We are where we are.
We are where we are. And it would be great if we were to do it all again differently.
Emmett, is he right? Come on.
No. Multiple levels. So to follow on with that from Alan said, so because I have every reason to want self-driving cars to be a thing. I can't drive. And I'm lazy. I never plan on learning to drive. But I've been talking to people who are involved, the biggest advocates for these cars for years. And I remember back in 2017, 18, talking to people like likes of Nissan and stuff. And they were saying, I'll give it like 21, 22. Okay, we have a pandemic happened. We get to sort of, you know, that post-pandemic era. Three or four years. Then we see earlier.
Like cold fusion. 10 years away. It always will be.
And it always will be. And it just kept going that way. Even we've seen the UK, its own test trials have gone on. And the key thing is, even places where you have the Waygos of this world, like I have a friend in Arizona whose parents are separated, who, when she's visiting them for Christmas, like she uses one of those driverless cars to get around. But that's because we have, and again, it's to do with how it's structured, very, very straight roads. And it's very limited into where it goes A to B. It's as soon as you bring in that first corner, there's a problem. As soon as you bring in that first crossroads, there's a problem. And this is the thing, when you realize the sheer amount of data that comes involved in making a road network of any kind work that way, there's an issue. Now, like, obviously, I know you want to sort of delay a bit on Metro, but as one of the people who's like, I can kick on Metro.
No, I want to just kill Metro, full stop.
Okay, well, here's the thing. There are lots of obvious good reasons to kick Metro, right? The biggest being our inability to actually get it built. That's the real reason to kick it. But the rationale that Dermot had is basically the opposite reason to why you would want to kick it, because underground, and obviously it'll be automated as well, it'll be driverless is the idea. Typically speaking, and I know this might sound wild, Kieran, because it's underground, it isn't using that much land overland. So therefore, it's more efficient. It can move a lot more people a lot faster, like the Port Tunnel, basically, only on, you know, a lot greater level of people and, you know, much more efficient. And frankly, it's more energy efficient too. Like when you think of the tonnage per person used, public transport by and large, and I know Dermot Desmond supported autonomous buses, is always going to be better for that. But, you know, an underground system makes an awful lot of sense in terms of the little, relatively little amount of land mass used. But I was saying to Alan before he went on air, our biggest problem, one of the reasons the Metro North is so hard to build, is when you look at every line that has come back on stream in the last few decades, like you talk about the Lewis, you talk about these new sort of rail extensions, they're all on places that there was previously rail stock of some kind. So it was either government-owned land or there was already a huge local support. It was the opposite of NIMBYism. Mm. The problem, the biggest problem Metro has always had in terms of getting built, aside from just general inefficiency, is it would be the first time in well over a century that we were building rail lines on something that wasn't previously in its life a rail line. And so you can kick Metro all you want, but autonomous is not what's going
to
be.
I will continue to kick Metro all I want. The street structure we have then, Alan, that's a big stumbling block.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? And you go back to kind of some of the streets in particularly, say, in Dublin, for example. I mean, they're there since Viking times. Yeah. You know, you go Fishamble Street, and that was that was a street 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
More. How much does the fact that most other road users are people impact? Yeah. You know what I mean? That one of the big kind of drivers of unpredictability, sorry to use that pun unintentionally, on the road are actually just people, and people's behaviour is unpredictable for AI.
Yeah, and one of the great examples of a street that is not AI driverless friendly is one outside here. Diggs Lane is cobblestones, and it's crooked and it twists and it has a slope on it, and people step out from the pavement without wondering which direction the cars are coming from.
And there's a pub at the bottom of it as well, which really helps manage.
Yeah, I just wonder, I guess maybe, do you know what, I was kind of grasping for a better way of asking this question, so I think I've finally gotten there. Could AI and could the technology as it exists at the moment actually deal with our streetscape if it wasn't for people?
Yeah, it would. There's a lot of street furniture in densely packed streets like Dublin, like this particular area, and not just Dublin, many other streets as well. And where autonomous vehicle, independent driving, driverless vehicles work better is where there's less street furniture, straight lines, and people behave. Right. Mm-hmm. And that they don't challenge the vehicles by stepping out in front of them. And when you get that kind of conformance, then you're going to get a lot better throughput with driverless cars. Motorways are the best example of where it can work really effectively. And already we have a level of self-driving with some cars where you can just basically switch it on, occasionally touch the steering wheel and it'll take the bends and it'll tuck in behind the car behind. And you can
most of them have a safety protocol built in that will tell you to hold on to the wheel once you let go. But actually, the reason it's there is because people know you can let go for large parts of the journey.
And you touch it every 10 or 15 seconds when it beeps or whenever it ramps up. But to go back to your question about streets and street furniture and the street furniture being people who are totally unpredictable, that is the biggest challenge to driverless cars. And as Emmett says, we need a huge amount of data, because what would work for the citizens' behaviour, for the in one city wouldn't necessarily be culturally the same in a different part of the world.
We have to make people behave. Yeah. So it's interesting, when automobiles first became more ubiquitous on the roads, in the States, the way they did this was a jay was a kind of an awful word for someone who was kind of poor and downtrodden or whatever. And it was actually the automobile industry who came up with the term jaywalking to describe people who crossed the road at the wrong place because they wanted it to be a derogatory term, and it encouraged people then to modify their behavior and only cross the road at the right pace. And I wonder, Emmett, whether we'll see another iteration of that. It'll be all these kind of autonomous vehicle manufacturers who will be lobbying government to try and encourage a change of behavior.
I'm sure they will try that. But the other factor, because again, Dermot Desmond's thinking we can have all this in 10 years. Now, he's a very successful businessman, very wealthy, but therefore he should know the speed of regulation is quite slow. And so we have to get this technology to a point where it is proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that it's not just as safe as humans, safer than humans, because there's no way any regulator says yes to that. Then you've got to go through all the processes. Then you've got to ensure there's market demand in big markets, because like Ireland is relatively small as economies go. You need your Germanys, your USAs to want this en masse, which is no guarantee at all. 2035 is comically unrealistic, basically. And again, it doesn't really address the energy issue. That's like, you know, still a big concern with the production of a lot of these vehicles. Like, we need to be looking again more towards, again, Desmond was supporting autonomous buses, but underground solves an awful lot of those problems. Coming back to that, an underground rail link, you know, we've seen them across Europe. Ireland may fail at them, but there's a reason they are so popular across Europe, and that's because they're efficient and they get the job done. And once you've had that first big capital investment, they can last 80 to 100 years with very minor upkeep.
What's the experience been in places like Arizona where they have had the autonomous vehicles? You know, in terms of safety.
Yeah, there. I mean, every time there's an accident, it's blown up and reported extensively as being an example of that. But I think there's four cities, some parts of Los Angeles, San Francisco, Austin, Texas, and Phoenix, Arizona, have trials of Cruise or Waygo ride-sharing taxis. Every time, as I said, there's an incident, it gets blown up. I know people who've done it and who've gone into these things and used them for rides, and it's really, really eerie. And it really does take some re-education for people to let go of the fact that there's nobody steering the steering wheel, there's nobody sitting in it. But to go back to something else you said a minute ago about having to educate people and the differences in cultural differences across cities. If you've ever been to Amsterdam recently and stepped onto a cycleway,
oh my god,
yeah, and that's now embedded into Amsterdam.
You'd be safer
citizens.
Crossing the M50.
It's just the way that they behave now, and it's tourists who walk out in front of that. So you can shift the behaviour of pedestrians, but it takes a long time to do that. You can't just sort of introduce a regulation saying no stepping out anymore.
Well, what then, before I let you go, Emma, what about the broader point, I guess, Dermot Desmond was making, that we're on the precipice of like monumental change in terms of AI, and maybe we need to reevaluate the direction of travel in terms of kind of not necessarily big infrastructure projects. I don't want to go through the National Development Plan again, line by line. But you know what I mean? That society is about to kind of take a big leap forward.
Well, even with that, and I'm definitely going to defer to Alan on this a bit, but it's far more useful from the logistics and planning stage. Like, you know, rather than having it controlling the vehicles, which is, I think, what Dermot's proposing, when it comes to how we're planning routes and the likes of that, that's where using that sort of technology can come in more useful, like much more so than the vehicles themselves being controlled by the robots, like the robots being sort of almost like extra consultants, but using, you know, the reams of data we have based on previous transport infrastructure to give better advice on design and planning.
I would take a broader perspective, and I'd say that artificial intelligence will impact many or almost all aspects of our lives to a greater or a lesser extent, depending upon that aspect. But when it comes to transport, that's going to be a slow impact.
All right. Emmett Ryan is a technology journalist, and Alan Smeaton is Emeritus Professor of Computing at Dublin City University. Gentlemen, thanks a million for joining us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.